Welcome back to another episode of Dan Has a Plan Beyond the Balance Sheet. I'm Daniel B. Smith, a financial advisor on the Family Wealth Management team at UBS Financial Services. Our branch is located in Paramus, New Jersey, and I can be reached at daniel.b.smith@ubs.com. I'm joined by my daughter, Alana J. Smith.
We're back.
Our guest today is Joe Marsigliano. Joe is recently retired, and he's here to talk about transitioning to retirement. He is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services, and his views are his own.
Retirement. Never heard of her.
I hear that word every day and multiple times a day.
Yeah. What's the biggest question around retirement?
What am I going to do with my time?
Oh, it's not when can I retire. It's I'm scared to retire.
That's the one I hear most. What am I going to do when I retire? So people generally work longer because they're still grappling with that.
Right, right. They just head down, power through. I don't know anything different.
Yeah. So what we try to do through the financial planning process is for several years leading up to a retirement age, it's more of a conversation of empowerment. So empowering people that they can get over the financial hurdle, frees them up to focus more on what are they going to do with their time and, you know, what are their retirement goals in retirement, non-financial goals. And during the conversation with Joe upcoming, we'll explore that.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about that with Dr. White on the podcast, just saying like, you know, she has some 70 something patients and this comes up a lot. As you were talking about similarities in your jobs, that kind of like ushering someone into the next phase of their life is a special and unique position you find yourself in.
Really, that's the fun of my job is to see, first and foremost, the people that do the financial planning are adding money to their accounts and stick with their investment risk profile. They're doing the heavy lifting. I see my role more as a coach, which I have a lot of experience coaching, but financial planning really is coaching. And what I always say to people is, it's, you know, it's not Dan saying you can retire. It's not you saying you retire. Let the plan provide you the data.
So you can focus on the life side of it.
Correct. And even pre-retirement, a lot of people tend to hyper-focus on the money. And I say, you know, the money is going to go through ebbs and flows of up and down, mostly up, but focusing on the non-financial part of your life is equally important during the pre-retirement phase. Job, family, health, fun.
Right. So that leads me to our Ask Dan question of the month, which, by the way, if you have a question for Dan that you want me to ask, you can email me at alana.smith@ubs.com, alanna.smith@ubs.com. Send your questions. They may be featured on an episode.
Here we go.
So you were talking about the pre-retirement phase. So this listener asks, hi, Dan, I'm a freelancer and I don't have a 401k or a regular retirement plan. I would just like to say a lot of people are freelancing these days. So you probably see some of this, a decent amount.
I do.
So this listener asks, how do I actually save for retirement when my income is unpredictable?
Yeah, for this type of profile client, it takes a little bit more discipline, okay? So historically, people work at a job. The employer provides a 401k. Through their payroll, money is put into the 401k. The company matches money. The money's invested. Pretty simple, right? As much as you can automate that process as a freelancer, the better off you'll be.
How does that happen?
Essentially, what you want to do is electronically commit to a fixed dollar amount that you can commit to monthly that can be accomplished regardless of your income for that month. Okay, so sometimes it's going to come from earnings, sometimes it's going to come from savings. All right, but commit to a dollar amount to pay yourself first from your pool of money, whether it's already saved or whether it's incoming.
Mm. And you're talking about whether it's a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, or what is the guidance?
The guidance is this. Historically, when I work with clients, there's three types of accounts at the personal level. There's an individual retirement account, which is tax deductible. There's a Roth IRA. There's no tax deduction, but it grows tax deferred. And then there's a brokerage account. So generally what I do is this. I have them systematically bring money into a brokerage account. And at the end of that tax year, depending on their situation and working with their CPA, we'll either keep it in their brokerage account because they may need it to pay estimated taxes. We'll put it into a deductible IRA so they can get a tax write-off. Or if they're in a low tax bracket, we'll contribute to a Roth.
Got it.
So it kind of takes the decision-making out of the equation. Think of it like breathing. When you go through a day, you're breathing every so often, every day.
Yeah, automatic.
This is financial breathing.
Got it. Love that. Okay, great. And as a freelancer, what would you say to this person just in terms of like starting to plan? It sounds like they maybe don't have a plan in place.
Regardless of where you are in your financial life, whether it be high school student going to college, whether it be post-college with debt, whether it be a freelancer, whatever your story is, get it memorialized in a financial plan. Assets, liabilities, goals.
You deserve it.
We move from there.
You heard it here first from Dan the man. Let's talk to Joe about a career and retirement.
The Joe Marsigliano. Lana J, we're joined by the Joe Marsigliano.
Welcome, Joe.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Another life well lived.
Yes. Yeah. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on life and working and retirement and everything in between.
You know, Joe has just transitioned into retirement and he was an early adopter of financial planning, especially with my retired business partner, the Paul Platic.
Shout out.
The man, the myth, the mystery.
He's going to love hearing that.
Well, let's start there. What was it like to start financial planning?
Well, can I just set the stage?
You can.
Okay. So we're in Pearl River, New York.
Okay.
It's me and Joe. And was anybody else there?
I think it was just us two.
Yeah. So Joe and I were sharing a Guinness at Gildea's.
I'm not sure it was Gildea's at the time, but that's where we were.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
And he said, you know, Dan, I really want to work with your group, but I can't work with you.
Because we're keeping friends and business separate.
Yeah. Friends and family. I said, well, if I got the perfect guy for you, enter Dr. Paul Platic.
In my defense, we were coaching at the time, spending a lot of time together on the ball field. And I just felt like that separation would be a good thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm surprised he didn't suggest it first.
He may have, but I think it was my idea.
I'm sure.
Yeah, Joe doesn't know this, but he has been deemed Paul Platic's favorite client.
Wow.
Really?
He said, no one ever came to a meeting more prepared and asked better questions than Joe Marsigliano.
How's that make you feel?
Coming from Paul, that is high praise.
That is, I'm telling you, that's massive praise.
And I'm proud to be that appreciated by him because I appreciated him, as you know.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So you shared a Guinness, you were talking about finances. What made you want to start financial planning?
So I was working with another financial planner who I felt had his own interests ahead of mine. And this is someone that my dad had referred me to, and I just didn't feel comfortable. So I knew I needed a planner. I knew he wasn't my guy. And I knew Dan and Paul were in business and doing great things. So I wanted to leverage that. And I'm a big planner.
Yeah. And Joe recently retired, but it should be noted that he really worked his tail off during his work career. He worked in predominantly IT.
Yes.
And it's a very fast-paced, budget-conscious. You always had to have your head on a swivel with making sure that you were ahead of what was happening at a company. And, you know, changing companies was a frequent thing for Joe. And, you know, he did a great job of kind of boxing out the fact of being not relevant in his world. I thought that was is that a good characterization?
Yeah, I appreciate that. I have held 9 jobs over the course of my career, and I never planned on changing jobs 9 times, okay? But in the pharmaceutical space, there's a lot of merger M&A activity. People buy and sell each other, and you wind up in a job on Friday and on Monday out of a job because something occurred over the weekend, and it's time for you to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Stressful, it sounds like.
It was stressful the first couple of times, and then luckily, in many cases, there was severance involved. And also what would happen was, in the pharma space, it's a very small kind of group of people, especially in the IT world. When you're told to leave one company and you find out folks are going to another company, a lot of the former folks wind up at the new place, and you wind up walking down the hall, seeing people that, wait a minute, I used to work with you. And, you know, it's they keep each other together.
So going back to the beginning here a little bit, Joe was the oldest of 4 boys. I'm the oldest of 4 boys.
Okay, we connective
had that,
tissue.
We had that commonality. And you grew up in Rockland County, right?
Historic West Nyack.
Historic West Nyack. Okay. Where'd you go to high school, college?
I went to Albertus Magnus High School and Pace University in Pleasantville.
Okay. Did you always know you wanted to be in IT?
No. As a matter of fact, I went to Pace specifically to become an accountant, and I didn't like it. My first 2 years of accounting, I'll never forget it. I met a finance teacher after school one day and he said, I need to talk to you. He goes, what's wrong with you? I go, I'm here at this accounting school. I don't like accounting. And he said, well, what do you like? And I said, I'm working for an office machine dealership. They have technology, they have the computers, they have software. I really like that. He said, do you know that we have an accounting and information systems program? Oh. And I said, no. And he goes, okay, from now on, I'm your faculty advisor. I will sign off on your courses and you need to come see me every semester. And that changed me into an IT guy.
Wow.
Powerful.
Very powerful. So you graduated from Pace. What year was this?
1983.
83. And where did that lead you?
I went to work for the office machine dealership that I was working for, Green Business Machines in New York. And I traveled in Manhattan. My territory was Wall Street to the George Washington Bridge. Learned a lot about how to survive in New York. And then I realized I didn't want to pursue a sales path. And I wanted to be more IT oriented. So my mom, who at the time was working at Literally in Pearl River, got me an interview at Literally in Wayne. And I got a job there as a systems analyst. And that kind of set me on my way.
Nine jobs later, here you are.
Here I am.
Listen, I relate.
Lana has nine jobs in a year.
Right now.
That's nine shows in a week.
That's true. But so, okay, as you mentioned, learned a lot about surviving in the city. Like, as you were gathering what kind of life you wanted probably during that time, can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what you liked, what you didn't?
Well, I knew I wanted to have a family. That was very important to me. And when did I meet Mary? I met Mary at my cousin's wedding in 1984. And we started dating, and then we were very similar in family styles and family values. And then I kind of tried to marry work with family and try and, you know, balance them so that I was kind of moving forward in both fronts. And the two of us were like-minded along those lines. Mary was working at the time as well. And we managed to make it work with all the distractions.
So you got married and you have two children, right?
Two.
All right. A boy and a girl.
My daughter, Jillian, is going to be 34 in September, and Matthew will be 30 in April.
And my first connection with Joe was you and Jill were in the same class. I'm sure it was probably soccer,
on the
right?
field, yeah.
Or could have been earlier than that.
It might have been earlier because we were coaching T-ball, and you and Coach Flagg were teaching us how to coach the kids.
Oh, okay.
So it might have been a Matthew Ben connection.
All right.
And then shortly thereafter, it was Alana Joe.
I gotcha. So the Montvale Athletic League brings people together.
That's absolutely right. And that comes back over and over.
And to this day, I see some of those kids and they're very polite and very outgoing and they say hello. It's wonderful.
Yeah, that's always a treat. So I know you were always hustling with work. You and Mary were very devoted parents. You kept your eye on the ball with financial planning, but Joe has other interests as well. So rumor has it that you drive a motorcycle.
That's true.
I've never seen the motorcycle.
I bought the motorcycle in 2020. It was my COVID bike. And I used it when you had to isolate. So I isolated on the bike.
Nice.
Went for rides.
Very nice.
Yeah, I've been riding since I was very young, but I hadn't ridden for quite some time. And then when I was 50, I bought a midlife crisis bike. And then in 2019, I bought a real bike.
And another one of his interests is that he makes great soups. I can tell you that because I happen to get some overflow once in a while, but which is very nice. But you enjoy cooking, right?
I love to cook. Again, when COVID hit, I pretty much took over a lot of the meal prep and planning. And I would make too much and share. Well, and unfortunately, there's been a lot of folks in our vicinity who, you know, have fallen ill. And when you bring that kind of stuff over, it does a lot of good.
I know your brother Michael is an accomplished cook, isn't he?
My brother Michael worked professionally as a chef for his whole career.
Who ordained you guys in the cooking area?
So I couldn't get into the kitchen. My mother was a great cook. My brother was a great cook. My uncle was a great cook. So I didn't really get into it until later in life.
Yeah, no room.
There was no room at the table.
No room at the end.
But I learned and I watched. And my grandmother on my dad's side was a very good cook. And I was very lucky to have a lot of good teachers.
I've always admired you and Mary and your family. You're always very family oriented. It's deep and wide, I would call it.
Yeah.
And, you know, whenever I'm talking to Joe, I'm always asking him, you know, what's up for the weekend? It's always boom, boom, boom. So generally something with family every weekend, right?
We do spend quite a bit of time and focus on the family.
Yeah.
More so even when the kids were growing up, we would try and marry grandparents with children and bring that all together because it's just very rewarding.
So through the financial planning process, we spent a lot of time with you on the numbers part of it, but he also talked to you about the non-numbers part of it. How did financial planning shape what your exit strategy was going to be?
So Paul was very strategic and we were very like-minded with that strategy. We agreed on the approach and then there was the tactical components, which ultimately made the strategy work. So once we kind of came up with what we wanted to do, then how we were going to do it sort of followed along. And you guys also helped me, Paul and Dan helped me a lot with the renovation of my home, with the sale of my dad's home, with the, you know, various financial transactions that we've executed that have been, you know, fairly complicated. So it's been a very beneficial relationship.
So, you know, you're the quintessential sandwich generation guy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So there was A, the empowerment to retire, but B, it was, this is my vantage point anyways. Joe was very immersed in helping both his dad, his late mother-in-law, his father-in-law, and on the flip side, he helps his kids as well, okay? And then it kind of goes a little more horizontal with an aunt that you help. And it could be anything from getting the echo to work to, you know, making sure that the driveway is shoveled and that type of thing. So do you have time?
You have to make time for some of those things. What I try to do is prioritize what's, you know, first and foremost, and then whatever's left over, you hand it out as best you can. But I'll ask for help. I've learned as old as a four to delegate and ask for help when you need it. So when I get too much on my dad's plate, then I'll get my brothers to get involved and try and share the load a little bit. But yeah, it becomes, when you say sandwich, I didn't anticipate it being that way. Meaning when I retired, I thought it was going to be, you know, here comes golf, here comes travel, here comes sports and that kind of thing. And right. As it turns out, my dad wound up in need of care. So I immediately kind of transitioned from working to caregiving. And that was unexpected. Now, Luckily, I was prepared for that financially. And that came from years and years and years of working with you guys. But emotionally and mentally, that wasn't what I had envisioned doing.
And to be fair, you also have had some enjoyment things you've done as well. I know you've done a couple of trips. I know you're a big concert goer. You've reconnected with some friends. The workday kind of gobbled up a lot of time. So, and he does make great soup. Did I mention he made?
You did.
So he dropped off red lentil today.
That's exciting.
Not only is it lentil, it's red lentil.
Your favorite color.
Yes.
It came out pretty good.
Can you talk about when you decided to retire? Was it a cut and dry decision because of the plan, or was it more complicated?
A little more complicated than that. So what happened was in October of 2024, I was let go. And I wasn't expecting to be let go. So what happened was there was a rationalization of the organization and a reorg, and your services are no longer required. Fine. Now, that was October. I had planned to retire first quarter of the following year.
Wow.
So it wasn't that I wasn't prepared, but I wasn't expecting it. But it wound up to be a bit of a blessing because it came with severance, which was very generous at the time. And it allowed me to, you know, leave earlier than I thought I would with a little more than I thought I would have. So that actually worked out relatively well. However, a week or two after being let go, that's when I became caregiver. So it kind of all happened in a tumultuous kind of way, but ultimately everything found its way and we worked it all out.
Yeah, I mean, you can look back and put things in a box, but emotionally that's a lot going on at once.
It was, because it involved, first we had to relocate my dad into assisted living, then we had to sell his home, and then, you know, there was just a lot of financial issues, legal issues, tax issues. It was difficult, and I relied heavily on the family wealth management team to help me with that, and they came through in a great way.
What was Mary's role in your decision making?
She had some concerns. She wanted to make sure that I had something set up for after retirement. And quite honestly, at the time, I had it in my head, but I didn't have it laid out for her to see and understand. So her concern was that I wasn't going to have a lot to do. Lo and behold, I wound up with more to do, so I knew what to do about. So it was a concern, but it ultimately worked itself out. But, you know, you raise a point. When I retired, there's a joke, I married you for better or for worse, but not to have lunch with you for every day. You know, you have to learn how to maneuver those relationships that completely get changed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have, but, you know, it took a little bit of time to sort of transition from the way it used to be into the way it is now into what we hope it'll be in the future.
Do you have any advice for people going through that?
Actually, I would say there's a lot of planning. There's a lot of material out there. There's courses you can take that would help you understand what you want to do. There's checklists of what you should do as a retiree to transition into retirement, to really own it and enjoy it. You know, when your job stops, some people, their identity stops. So you need to have something that you want to move forward with to replace that. Retirement isn't a reward for having worked decades. It's more about transitioning into a new phase of life.
Yeah. Paul used the term, it's not retire, it's rewire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love that.
So it's not that Joe stopped being a human being, you know, he just didn't go to a place where he was rewarded with a paycheck. His paycheck is now being facilitated via his investments and other things. And the other part is the time just had to be reallocated. What I see with the most successful people that transition, usually it's a good, strong family base. Secondly, you have to have some interests, or if you don't have something, you have to create something. Okay. So, and he's kept an open mind with that.
How have you and Mary found your own interests in this time?
Well, we're still working on that a little bit.
Great answer.
Yeah. We work together on a lot of stuff. We work together on our financials. We work together on the elder care issues, the geriatric care issues, but we haven't really found the Joe and Mary sweet spot just yet. So that's something that is a work in progress, I'd say.
Fair. But more than fair.
There's music, there's sports, there's food, there's family, there's the church. We all like that, all five of those things a little bit. Some more so than others.
Have you noticed any change in your health since you've retired?
Oh, yeah. As you get older, you know, your body ages and you have to do special exercises and stay fit and stay active mentally and physically. And that's something I'm working on because I have felt some changes physically that I need to, you know, continue to manage.
Do you feel like when you're working, maybe you can answer this too, Dad, but like your focus is just on everyone else, everything else. Yeah. And then in retirement, maybe there's some space to start to pay attention to some things.
No, actually, I'm still feeling that focus on everybody else.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I know.
Well, I've got my dad's financials. I've got my son Matthew's financials. I've got our financials. And I love financials. Like you said, when Paul and I sat down, it was a whirlwind of spreadsheets.
That you had brought in.
Data, financials, statistics, analysis.
I've mentioned this color scheme before. It's a very rough categorization. And these are just how you communicate with these different styles of people. I use four colors. Green is kind of life of the party. Gold is a type of person that worries about everybody else but themselves. There is red, which is very quick pace, quick in decision making. What's the plan? How are we going to do it? And then there's blue. Blue is very fact oriented, meaning that there has to be a lot of data to support the decision. Okay. And I know Joe has red, but he also has blue. Okay. He does like data, but he's good at making decisions, which that's a rare combination. I will tell you that. Very rare.
Yeah.
Usually blue needs to get the information and has to, you know,
marinate.
Oh,
sit with it.
Yes. And then come back with more questions. I'm red. I'm decisive. I would say you're red.
I am.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say Mary's gold.
She's definitely not red or blue.
But she's got a lot of green in her too.
She does.
Definitely.
Gold and green. Yeah. And there are times when I'm dead red and times when I kind of jump back and forth.
And these different color categorizations all have different transitions into the retirement phase.
You must have friends who are going through this alongside you or witness other people do it. What have you seen to be maybe a pitfall or like someone struggling through with the retirement thing?
I think in many cases, people just weren't mentally prepared. I mean, they had the financial piece in place and they thought they knew what they were going to do going forward. But then when they got to do it, they decided, you know what? That's not really what I want to do for the rest of my days. I think it's more a matter of finding what you think you might want, trying it, and if it doesn't work, being able to pivot or transition into something else.
It's so interesting because I think we spend a lot of time not actually thinking about what we want, but thinking about maybe what we're supposed to be doing. And certainly like raising a family must be full of that and the putting other people first. But what a unique time of life when you have so much information in the life you've already lived to say, what do I want?
It's the perfect opportunity to reinvent yourself. You know, you've got all this experience, as you said, and you're in a position where you can now pick and choose the path. And it's more of a rewire, as you said.
Yeah. How's the stress level been between the two phases? Is it different stress?
It's a different kind of stress. I don't think it's any less or any more. Well, when you were working, the stress was, you know, corporate oriented. Now it's more action or lack thereof oriented. You know, did I miss this? Did I file this? Did I similar, but it's all you. You don't have a team anymore to help you.
Yeah.
Mm. I used to manage a team. Now I manage a TV remote.
You do more than that.
Yeah. My wife kids me because, you know, I have a team I work on and I delegate a lot. So she calls me Della Dan, my new nickname. But when I come home, I'm not Della Dan, okay? It has to be Dan.
Right.
Okay? That's a different thing, you know?
Yeah, my lowest of four, as I mentioned, I've been called a control freak on several occasions, but I just like to get things done. You know, like if someone's not doing it and I can see another way to get it done, I'll take the other path and get it accomplished.
Yeah.
Aha moment?
Yeah. So has there been a retirement aha moment?
Not so much an aha moment as a series of aha moments. So in other words, I thought it was going to be this and it wound up to be, you know, several other things. So it's been, I didn't think I was going to do this. I didn't think I was going to learn so much about assisted living, independent living, and nursing homes. I didn't think I was going to learn so much about long-term care policies. So I'm learning things on the fly that I didn't anticipate having to experience going forward, if that answers it.
Yeah, it does. It does.
What's been the most illuminating thing?
I think the older folks in our community probably should be treated a little better. I think there's more to be given to them, more to be offered to them. And it's just a shame that I see these folks, they're alone, they don't have a lot of support, and they deserve better. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's probably an area that we could all do better at.
Yeah, what I tell people in Joe's position all the time, and they do it intuitively, I don't really have to say it much, but you really have to advocate for the people in your life. Usually as people, you know, get up in years, things are more difficult for them. And definitely, you know, I have a lot of respect for people that are my senior because they've been through more than I have. And I learn a lot from that. But to be there and support for their best life, if they're living somewhere, keeping the environment there, their feet to the fire, so to speak, you know, even going to physician's office, helping them with checking in, the paperwork, their scheduling, and being in there during the session. It could be a dentist, an eye doctor, or a cardiologist. It doesn't matter. But, you know, just asking questions that may not come up.
Yeah. Listen, young people could use that too. It's like there's so much to advocate for. I asked this of your father-in-law, but what do you think, and maybe it's a piece of advice you would give people of my generation or anyone about a life well lived and what the meaning of life is for you?
I think it's more, for me anyway, it was family. It was making sure that everyone was okay on the family perspective while having fun, while growing and learning, while experiencing different things. That to me was kind of the driving force for many of the things we did and many of the decisions we made.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well said. Alana Jay, this was the Joe Marsigliano.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Marsigliano always was ready financially for a retirement. He did a great job of preparing for retirement.
Yes, very present person.
Yes, he thinks deeply. He mentions fun, family, finances, health. There's a part of retiring that you can't prepare for. And he embraced that as well.
Yeah, we talk on the episode about him being a planner, like liking the data. And it sounds like he did as best he could to prepare for that retirement consciously, and then retirement threw everything else at him.
Correct. So to go back a generation, an oversimplification here is this, is that when I was 12 years old, my grandmother passed away and my dad was in his early 40s. It was his mom. Then his dad lived probably another 10 years. Okay. So retirement for that generation was prepare financially and then you're retired. And how are you going to fill your time?
Right. Because he didn't have parents to care for. By the age of 50, he had lost his parents.
I would say in his early to mid 50s.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So again, that's an overgeneralization, obviously, but there's many more factors involved in retirement today for people in my age group, which is basically 60s. The tail end of the baby boomer generation.
Right, because you're told you retire when you're 65. Like that's what
I was always retired.
Of course.
Okay.
And here you are at 65.
And I don't even smell it. Okay. So people are working longer.
Yeah.
But they're also living longer.
Right.
Okay. And I also love what I do. Okay. A lot of people don't love what they do. But a lot of people are prevented from fully retiring because they still have, maybe their spouse is taking care of a aging parent. So, you know, you really can't have time together to adjust. So you might as well work.
Sure.
Okay. So that's how you get your fulfillment, if you will. But it's a very different circumstance. And then the flip side of that is the people in their 60s generally have kids in their 30s. And, you know, sometimes financial, but most of the time it's, you know, you're still guiding your young adult children into their careers.
Okay. It's different now. Everybody I know is kind of grappling with expectations of life by the time you're in your 30s and how that has shifted over the years. Having the empowerment to go after what you want also comes with, like, college is more expensive. Like, my generation is not making as much money. Housing is more expensive. You know, there's all kinds of, like, things to ponder that leave people in their 30s needing some support.
Yeah, and every generation does it differently.
Right, right.
Okay. You know, when I was 25, I was married. At 28, my wife and I had our first kid. So I was in not a rush, but I wanted to have kids on the earlier side of life. And it's kind of polar opposite now. People are getting married later and they're having families later. It's all good. It's just, you know, it's life.
Yeah. And so it's parallel to what Joe was talking about of like perceptions being shattered, right? Thinking things are going to go one way and then they just don't. And like the more people we talk to on this podcast, the more we have conversations, the more that seems to be the only truth is that expect the unexpected.
Yeah. And he said he had to pivot quickly.
We love a pivot.
Yes. There's a lot of pivoting going on.
Really quickly, like within weeks, he said.
Yes. Like March Madness for retirement.
Yeah. A lot of pivoting. Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, we love a pivot here. And it was great to hear perspective from someone who, you know, he said he was let go months before retirement.
Yeah.
And it came with benefits, even emotional turmoil and then a severance pay. So like all kinds of unexpected twists and turns.
To his credit, he kept looking out the front windshield. He really did.
Which is your biggest thing.
Yeah. You know, I can't tell you how many times people want to look back. And I always say, listen, let's look out the front windshield because we're dealing from now to the finish line, not 10 years ago to the finish line. And Joe embraced that, I have to say.
For sure.
Yeah. Really admire him.
Yeah. Me too. All right. That was it for Joe Marsigliano on retirement.
Love you.
Love you.
Is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.